Mike Morielli, most outstanding Canadian and one of the best receivers that I had to deal with for a long time. But I just want to be clear, do you just compare yourself to Braylon Addison, or are you talking about the scheme?
No. You comparing me to Braylon Addison? Not a chance. I knew what I did well.
You are now listening to The Waggle, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
That's right, The Waggle fans. It is that time. The Grey Cup is here, the 107th Grey Cup presented by Shaw. And this podcast is presented by our friends at Sport Clips. Because each and every week we bring you everything you need to know about the CFL thanks to our friends at Sport Clips. And they are known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience. And you get the massaging shampoos, the hot steam towels, plus sports on TV like hockey, baseball, basketball, but most importantly, football. And most importantly, the legendary haircuts. You can now book your appointment online at sportclips.ca. That is sportclips.ca. And now, joining the Waggle, man who obviously Tiger Cat fans love because he helped bring them a Grey Cup championship. And how do you feel about this, Davis? Because the last time the Tiger Cats won the Grey Cup, not only was Mike Morelli celebrating, you were maybe crying as the Tiger Cats went through you on the way to win it.
Wow, that's true, Mikey. That is a fact. I guess it's been that long, but it's got to be pretty exciting for all those involved, and I had a chance to be out there as like you were on Sunday. What an atmosphere, eh?
Oh my God! We were obviously way up there in the seventh level there, calling the game, Marco Ferguson and I, and you could feel the excitement rise up, from that stadium, and the way it looked visually was unreal. It was fantastic. It's a long time coming. It's one of those teams that reminds me of 20 years ago. I don't think there's been a similar type team that feels like their family, that feels like they're destined to win. And the Ticats this year feel like that group.
Well, the team that did win 20 years ago, you guys are still tight. You guys are always around each other, around the stadium. You guys were brought back to celebrate that team. How does winning a ring really bond you?
Well, you know what? The winning of the ring was just a kind of culmination of what it was like to play with those guys. Like it sounds cliche, but it was almost a bit of destiny, right? Like we figured, yeah, absolutely, we're going to win this game. We weren't quite good enough the year before. I don't think we trusted each other enough the year before. Like we came off a 2-16 year in 97 to go 12-5-1. That was really exciting, but we lost the last second field goal in Calgary, and then that next year is like, no, that's the end goal. We need to win that game. Never mind just getting there. So I think the Cats in 2019 are very similar, but guys are different nowadays. We all know that the way they interact, social media has had a big impact on it. But like I said, this is the kind of closest I've felt over the last, couple decades to a team in Hamilton that really loves each other. But it starts with Orlando Steinauer. Like he was a key part of our 99 team. Bringing in Mark Washington was huge as well. I think those guys are kind of two peas in a pod. Been there, done that. Davis, you know Mark quite well. They did all the right things and all the right people. It's going to be fun.
So where do your allegiances lie? Because you obviously have called the games, done a great job for the Ticats, former Ticat. But the guy on the other sideline, O'Shea, and even the guy running the team, Walters, you have a relationship with both those guys. What is this going to be like for you watching the game with ties on both sides?
Oh, man, it tears you a little bit. I mean, let's face it, I'm a Hamiltonian. Hamilton is where I'm from, where I'm born, where I was born, and where I still am, and where I had my probably most successful part of my career. And O'Shea is hated in Hamilton. So you know, he's enemy kind of number one, but, you know, I have a lot of respect for Mike. Mike is one of my very close friends. I'm the first one to congratulate him. I'm not the first, but one of the first people I looked to congratulate was Mike, because I know the effort he puts into it. I know the passion he puts into it. I don't know if his team at this point can pull off a miracle. I think it has to be a bit of a miracle for him to do it. But at the same time, I look at Mike and I'm so happy for him, because this guy bleeds the CFL. He bleeds Canadiana. So this means more to him than just winning a football game. This is a cultural event to him. This is about, you know, what this country is all about. So that's important. And then I flip my allegiance to where my heart is. I'm like, well, you know, O'Shea's my boy, but, you know, the Cats, they need to win this darn thing. I'm tired of holding on to a 20-year stretch of being the last Grey Cup winners. I mean, they can't take our Grey Cup ring away. I'm just happy that someone else has an opportunity to get it, because 20 years is way too long.
What is it from a talent standpoint, a team on the field squad, that makes this group special? What is it? You lost Jeremiah. Obviously, Speedy has been unbelievable. But what do you think it is that talent-wise, you know, I think we'd all agree this is top to bottom and from beginning to end been the best team in the league. What is it?
Oh, this has been the best team in quite some time, at least that I've watched. And, you know, I get a chance to see them every week. So they are good across the board. I think in some places they're great across the board. Who would have thought that you would, you know, start the year with a Canadian running back and he lights it up and then he's gone. And then you replace him with another running back and he gets hurt. And then you bring in another guy and then they get hurt. And then you switch around and find a free agent late. And then you get your original guy, the American, come back to play. And then you hardly rush the ball, but you throw to some of the most dynamic receivers in the league. And, Tommy Condell's play calling and the way he sets things up. The offensive line has played tremendous. But who would have thought that you lose Jeremiah Mazzoli and a guy named Dane Evans comes in and literally is unflappable and unstoppable? It is unbelievable that, Davis, you had a lot of backup quarterbacks you played with.
I didn't play with any backup quarterbacks
that could have done that. There's no way.
Yeah, no, I'd say they were all great guys, and everyone's favorite guy is a backup quarterback. But
of course,
little have had any success when we needed them, and that's right. To further your point of just how impressive it's been with Dane. Staying on the offense, so June left, and we all applauded what June brought, and that offense was very good. What's been the biggest difference that you've noticed in the Tommy Condell offense compared to the June Jones offense?
I think with June, you kind of knew what you were going to get on every play. It was different, but you pretty much caught on. He wanted to get the ball out of the hands early into the playmakers, very wide open. You know, he got his kind of his style of football player, which is still there. The Braylon Addisons are there. The Brandon Banks are there. But, you know, he had this wide open game. With Tommy, he's got a great mix, and he does way more formationing. So he creates mismatches, and you know defensively that, you know, the minute they move all these guys around, you put Braylon Addison in the backfield, they move guys out. Like, I would put Braylon Addison in the backfield every play. Like, the guy is unbelievable.
Hey, but, Mike, I want to go right into that right there. That part about Braylon, is this special, specially tailored for him, the things he's doing? I watched last game. He was coming in, bombering in the backfield, like picking up, blocking like a fullback, and then he would check down as a receiver, or, you know, like you swing the ball to a running back, but you got a receiver back there. Do you think this is part of Tommy's offense, or something he just said, hey, Braylon is this special guy, I'm going to tailor this for him specifically? Have you asked him that, or do you know that?
You know, I don't know. My gut tells me that this is because Braylon's so special. I don't think you'd have the same result with just anybody. He can throw the ball too, if you wanted to. But the minute he gets back there and the combination, they go to that diamond formation in the backfield and you got all these receivers and all these backs and you got, you know, next thing you know, you got Santos Knox trying to cover Braylon Addison. I mean, it's not going to work, right? It's just the way that these guys, you know, out position people, out flank people. It's kind of reminiscent of me. When I played Paul Lapolis, he likes to do that as well. He likes to motion guys around, create mismatches. And And Tommy's good, but I think Tommy's taken it to a different level, and not afraid to push the ball down the field. Evans throws to spots. Like, he just lets balls rip. And we're talking, you know, double coverage, triple coverage, can't see the receiver. He believes in it. And these guys just go out and make plays for him.
Mike Morielli, most outstanding Canadian and one of the best receivers that I had to deal with for a long time. But I just want to be clear. Do you just compare yourself to Braylon Addison, or are you talking about the scheme?
You comparing me to Braylon Addison? Not a chance. I knew what I did well. If you wanted to get the guy to go over the middle and catch the ball on second and medium, second and long, and get the snot come out of his nose, then that was me. But Braylon Addison is a special piece. He's my favorite Ticat player. Personally, I just am very impressed, and that doesn't take anything away from the other guys. I mean, what Speedy has done is just remarkable. But I just think the multifaceted parts of his game are second to none. You know, you'll see him take the direct snaps. You'll see him do a bunch of stuff. And it's a great team game. I think the special teams under Reinbold have been fantastic. I think Hirelahu's had a really good year coming off one last year that wasn't great, at least punting the ball. You got a defense that's, you know, playing. I mean, their front seven is crazy. Their front four and the guys they roll through there. On any given day, you're going to have guys making plays. Last week it was Hauser, and you know, you always got Ted Laurent, you've got Dylan Wynn, you've got just about anybody you can plug and play. So Jarrett Davis, I mean, think of the guys they picked up, right?
Think about the guys that aren't playing. I mean, you have Jamal Westerman, who is, you know, arguably the most talented Canadian pass rusher mm-hmm. in the league, and then you have Adrian Tracy who's not playing, who was a star. Those guys were starters, and they're not on the line.
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
I wanted to ask you how much of, because Orlando is a defensive coordinator. That's what he is. He's now the head coach, but he's a DC. How much of his footprint, handprint is on this defense, and how big of a part do you think he has in, you know, play calling and game planning defensively?
I really believe he took a step back and he hired Mark and he's letting Mark do his thing. I think this is Mark Washington's defense through and through. You know, you got a great relationship of guys that love one another and they trust one another. Steiny has kind of taken that role. For me, at least, when I look at it, he's kind of taken that Ronnie Lancaster role. He stepped back. He's the general. He gets the guys ready. He preaches family. He preaches, you know, the values of competing, and he lets his coaches coach. The one thing, you know, Steiny did last year under June was he sat there. He was basically de facto, you know, offensive coordinator number two. Like, he learned the other facets of the game. He already knew defense inside and out. He started learning, you know, what happens on offense that makes him now a more well-rounded coach to be able to recognize things. But he lets his coaches coach.
And lastly, before we let you go, Mike, we need you to weigh in on the starting quarterbacks. And in this league is one that is run often by quarterbacks. So let's do the Swoop Airlines aerial report. These actually are two quarterbacks that you probably have seen play more than anybody. Zach Caleros obviously had a great time in Hamilton before. Many were surprised to see him playing, never mind playing in the Grey Cup. And then Dane Evans, who has been the story of the second half of the season. As a receiver, give me your appraisal of the football that both guys are playing coming into the Grey Cup.
Well, I think you start with Zach. I mean, who there shouldn't be anybody out there that's not happy for Zach Caleros. I mean, what he's gone through physically, mentally, you know, the trials and tribulations that come with kind of sport and a high pressure situation. I mean, seeing him out there and having success is awesome. I think that's good for the league. It's good for him. I think everybody should applaud that. And then you look at Dane Evans and you meet him and you talk to him and it's yes, sir. No, sir. Yes. Nice to meet you. You know, but he's unflappable. Like he's got something different. I think Zach's got a little bit more edginess to him. I think he's got a little bit more emotion in his game, but Dane's emotions are there. They're just hidden. He is just on point all the time, kind of like Danny Mac in a way where you throw a pick, it's the same response as if you throw a touchdown. It's part of the game. You get up, you do it again. He is very, very grounded in not only how he plays, but I think how he carries himself. And a lot of that has to do with, I think, his dad really kind of teaching that to him, you know, growing up, learning the quarterback position.
It'll be fun to see both of them sling it. Thank you so much, Mike. And before we let you go, you're not just a former Ticat and broadcaster now. You're also the commissioner of the CEBL. Tell us, our football fans, about the basketball that is being played in Canada, thanks to you.
Yeah, you know what? I'm really proud to be a part of this. This is, you know, for the best comparison is we are like the CFL for basketball. So very proudly Canadian, highly dominated by Canadian players, which you couldn't tell who is international, who's a Canadian star. We're trying to showcase our players that have had to go overseas for decades because there hasn't been a true national league in Canada. We are the national league. We are the showcase for all this great talent that is already here and the ones that are up and coming. You know, we're about to announce our seventh franchise. That'll happen on Wednesday. I'm standing right here now and where we're going to announce it, and that is in Ottawa. So we're pumped about that because that's a great market for us for a multitude of reasons. So we're ready to expand. We're ready to show people how great our product is. And I would say, without a doubt, outside of the Raptors, there's no better basketball played in this country than what we play at all our CBL games across the country. So I encourage people that are fans of football for all those reasons, that they love to see, you know, the player that they know or they went to school with or they saw or they've heard about locally. That's what we are. And you'll be pleasantly surprised and you'll have a great experience.
Awesome. Well, I mean, we've got a domestic soccer league that's starting. You've done a great job with the basketball, and obviously the CFL has been around for a long time, so it's good to see sports in our country continue to take the next step, and you're a big part of that. Thanks for this, Mike.
My pleasure, guys. Listen, enjoy yourselves.
Kickoff can mean a couple things. It can mean the start of a great time with your buddies. It may mean the start of a family ritual. For some, it may be addressing the bumps and bruises that come from playing a great game. You may end up with some damage to your knees, although participating in high-contact sports like football can increase the risk of sustaining a knee injury and the possibility of developing osteoarthritis later in life. Even spectators sitting on the sidelines can suffer the same sore knees as football players. For many people, bad knees are just another consequence of the wear and tear of aging. But for some people, the walking, running, twisting, and turning our knees are subject to every day begins to take a toll. Whether it's from a game of pickup football with guys or carrying the groceries up the steps, our knees are constantly under pressure, which can lead to the development of conditions such as osteoarthritis. Described as a result of the body's failed attempt to repair damaged joint tissues, osteoarthritis is the most common type of arthritis, affecting nearly 5 million Canadians. That's 1 in 6. One of the first signs of OA is knee pain that worsens following exercise or immobility. Treatment begins with a diagnosis. To learn more about osteoarthritis of the knee and treatment options, visit kneepainrelief.ca. That's kneepainrelief.ca. The information in this podcast about osteoarthritis of the knee is intended for the informational purposes only and is in no way intended to substitute for professional medical advice, to contradict medical advice given, or for medical care of any kind. All right, so more importantly, who's going to win the game? And it's time for the Leo Vegas odds. And the money line right now, you got Winnipeg 128, Hamilton minus 167. You can go money line and total points 52.5. Depending on what you want to do in terms of spreads, you've got lots of options. So go to leovegas.com as these numbers are going to fluctuate throughout the week. Hamilton is obviously the favorite.
Right.
They've only lost three games all year. Where do you see the value in terms of where you're placing your bet? Now, who do you think is going to win the game?
Right, right.
But what bet do you like?
Well, the one thing anyone betting should always know is that the bigger the game is, the tougher it is to find value. And so when you're talking about a Super Bowl, a Grey Cup, a World Series Game 7. It is very well handicapped, and it's really difficult to find that edge. So I would say that they've laid out a pretty good line here. And I would say the value in this, if you see any value, is with your team. Bet on who you want to win, because you're not going to find – you could scour through these numbers as much as you want. You have the money line. You have the spread. You have the totals. You're not going to find much value in regards to what they call a soft line. These lines will be pretty tough. But, yeah, go. I would – whoever you want to win, who you feeling to win, that's where I would lean. Other weeks, I could find value. This week, the value is who you want to win.
There's some game props, like first team to score. Winnipeg is minus 103. Hamilton is minus 136. And it's important to know that Winnipeg is, in fact, the home team since it is being played.
I found some value.
In a Western city.
The first team to score. Maybe you go with a guy that's played in the Grey Cup before. Zach's been to a Grey Cup. He might have a little bit of – he has experience. Maybe you go with him versus a guy that hasn't played in the game. A little rusty or nervous out the gate.
So the home team is going to call the toss.
Mm-hmm.
Winnipeg, I assume, probably going to take the ball in the second
half.
Why
do you assume that? About the second half. Yeah, I would probably assume that.
Right. So Hamilton's going to start with the ball, but potentially against the wind. Hamilton may drive.
You're really grasping at straws right now. Huh?
Hamilton might drive the entire field and score. I'm not so certain that Zach's experience in the big game will mean that he will score first. I'm not certain about anything, which is why.
Yes, that's why it's called gambling.
But it makes the game fun. It gives you another extra incentive. It's funny you said to just bet on your team, and then you're cheering that way anyways. I almost feel like you want to hedge your bet, because either way, you're either happy because your team ended the drought 20 years for Hamilton, 29 years for Winnipeg, or if they lose, but you've got some change that you might make some money, and then you could celebrate on winning the bet, even though you can't celebrate winning the Grey Cup game. And joining us on the Waggle, a man who not only has won the Grey Cup, lifted it, and really, you know, had the exit of all exits, winning it, but a man who also is known well in the city where the Grey Cup resides this year, because he's one of the best players that has played for the Stampeders, Henry Burris. Thank you, Hank, for waking up as you are on West Coast time to talk to us. And to me, this game is all about the quarterbacks. Dane Evans, you know, trying to begin his legacy, and Zach Collaros continuing the Collaros revenge tour. You know, as we get your opinion of the Swoop Airlines Aero Report on the two QBs, the storylines, like any Grey Cup, they start with the QBs, do they not?
Oh, it does start with the QBs, because I love the dynamic of this matchup where Zach Collaros, he's finally back in the Grey Cup, where he lost 2014, of course, to this Calgary Stampeder football team back in 2014, of course, in that fashion with Brandon Banks and company with Hamilton. And it's good to see that he's back getting a chance to play against his former team, which is led by Dane Evans, who's a rookie in Grey Cup, if you per se. But I think, you know, there's a good dynamic with the fact that, like you mentioned, here's Zach Collaros, who people ruled him out. He joins the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, which people ruled them out if they had to go on the road. And it seemed like it was a match made in heaven, the perfect addition to this formula for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and clearly the most important addition, which got this team and enabled them to believe in who they were once again. And now that's why they're playing in the Grey Cup, where with Dane Evans, I mean, we thought after the injury to Jeremiah Masoli that this team would skip a beat being the Hamilton Tiger Cats, but it seemed like everybody else picked their game up and rallied around this young quarterback. But you can tell, and I could tell early on, in that game it was a mic'd up game. And just by the way, he went out barking out signals and controlling things on the offense. Now he's playing with some all pros and some of the best players that he'll ever play with, but he's out there barking controls, making sure guys are paying attention, doing the things that you only would expect a savvy vet to do. But the fact is, when Dane stepped up and did this, you saw the team start to believe in him more and more and more. And now, in my mind, with this game being his first Grey Cup, I say just continue playing and not even realize that it's the Grey Cup, because everything you've done has gotten you to this point, Dane. Just continue to do it and focus on the game at hand, not all the other antics that go on outside, which makes the Grey Cup as phenomenal as it always is.
Is Dane Evans the new Bo Levi Mitchell? And I say that not because Bo Levi has clearly, you know, put himself in rarefied air in terms of Canadian quarterbacks, but the way Evans' career has started, and even, you know, his demeanor and some of the throws, the spots where he puts balls, I see a lot of early Bo in Dane. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, it's 100% fair, and especially from the angle of them taking over two very good teams. I mean, you know, with Bo stepping in back in 2013, of course, in 2014, he took over a Grey Cup team. And the fact was, he got his first championship in Vancouver, but the in the same situation now is presented to Dane Evans, where you're receiving a championship team here. The thing is, don't wreck it. Just continue to build it up. Build it up. Take control of the wheel, steering wheel. Make sure you put gas in it. Make sure you change the oil every 5,000 kilometers. Do those things to make sure that this engine continues to run the way that it was prepared and programmed to run. And he's done an outstanding job of doing that. And even guys to the point where we all knew that this was Jeremiah Masoli's offense coming into this season, just as it was Kevin Glenn's offense back in the day with the Stampeders and Bo taking over. But now you're starting to see them leave their DNA, their footprint, their fingerprint all over this baby. And the fact is, you know, he's making some great throws. I mean, last week that throw he made on the run to Brandon Banks in the corner of the end zone, just crossing the end zone against Josh Johnson, the speedy B, Brandon Banks. I mean, he's doing things that we knew he had the capability of doing, but now seeing him play with the confidence, just as a Bo Levi did within his growth, I mean, that's a great assessment right there, because you can see these two rounding into form at the right time. And as any championship team knows, and we've all seen in the past, you want to be playing your best football when it matters the most. And 100%, that's what Dane Evans is doing just right now.
So Dane Evans in this game, you know, is the new Bo Levi Mitchell. Is Zach Collaros the old Zach Collaros? Like, is he back to the level where we had the conversation of him being, you know, in the upper echelons of QBs in the league?
I don't think so. I don't think you can put Zach in that category right now.
He played two games, two DJ.
I just asked the questions.
It's two different. Yeah, it's two different Zach Collaroses right now, because, like Davis just mentioned, yeah, he's only played a couple of games. But one thing you can see that, back in 2015, Zach used his feet a lot. And, of course, after the knee injury that he suffered during that season in 2015, which derailed, you know, the kind of the entire operation or the season that Hamilton had. But in came Jeremiah Masoli, and we saw how outstanding he was from that point on. But Zach doesn't run around as much, and that's why you insert Chris Streveler. So you got that 1-2, the two-headed monster, you know, kind of like a Godzilla-type movie now, where which monster do you want to take on? One that's sitting in the pocket, more of a pocket passer with that veteran savvy and that presence and that composure, who can sit in there amongst whatever is going on swirling around him, which he did a great job in Saskatchewan, thinking it's going to be an emotional game with the fact of how the season began and him being the guy there and getting traded to Toronto. Now all of a sudden he's the kid just a block away with the bullies that you so hate, that being Saskatchewan. But he controlled his emotion. He has his team doing the same thing. He's made every guy on that team viable. And he did all these things with Hamilton. But the difference is, in this offense, I think there's only so high of a ceiling for a quarterback, where he played outstanding last week, connecting with Kenny Lawler on a big pass, with Darvin Adams on a big pass, and he hit some key passes just to keep their offense on the field and keep Cody Fajardo on that team on the sideline. But to me, he's more efficient in this offense, where when they need the big plays, as far as on the ground, they bring in Chris Streveler and they go wildcat crazy. You never know what to expect. But no, I think this is a totally different Zach Collaros. I just think from the fact of his veteran savvy and leadership, I think it's proven to be the MOP as far as for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but in a different way, not so much numbers production, but from the fact of leadership and taking good care of the football. That's the most important thing that he can do for this team.
So can two quarterbacks work? Like, we've seen it work for a couple games, and they had a while to prep for Calgary, but I've always been a believer, if you have two quarterbacks, that means you don't have one. Like, this is not Steve Spurrier in the SEC where we can just shuttle out quarterbacks. And I feel like if you were the starting quarterback, you would feel a type of way if you look to the sidelines and you were being called out of the game. Can that be something that you can sustain and win over a long time with two quarterbacks?
I think in this case you can, because the explosiveness of this offense is triggered around that two-headed monster, where if for some reason when Zach Caleros is in and playing and he's throwing for 400 yards and they're doing that week in and week out, there's no need for a two-quarterback system, because this is a passing system. This is an offense that's led identity-wise by their passing offense. But we all know this is a running offense. It's a running offense with a great defense and very good special teams. That's how Winnipeg is built. They're not built around their passing game. So, therefore, you want to try to create the most efficient passing game that you can possibly do, put out there on the field, that can really counterbalance and keep defenses guessing as far as what's to come, what do we need to prepare for, because there's only so many hours in the week for defenses to put up, you know, film and watch and try to expect what to expect the next week. But then also, now you got this other element. You got Chris Streveler coming off the bench. Now this team's even, if possibly, more explosive than what they possibly could be. But you saw the two games here in the playoffs, where game one against Calgary, it was the Wildcat system led by Chris Streveler to set up Zach Caleros to hit Darvin Adams on a deep pass. But the thing is, Calgary didn't prepare for one, but they prepared for the other, it seemed like. But then in Saskatchewan, it seemed like it was a total 360. They weren't ready for Zach in that explosive passing plays that he was able to put together, in his efficient plays to keep the chains moving, but they were able to bottle up Chris Streveler in that running game. But it goes to show you that, yeah, you might be able to stop one head, but you can't stop the other. But it gives defenses so many different looks, it makes it that much more challenging, because them together makes that offense even more explosive. There's not really one side you can say is going to be prolific this week compared to the other. So that's what makes it that much more of a dangerous system and one to prepare for.
When we look at talent, just pure talent, is the Hamilton Tiger Cats squad the most talented top to bottom right now in the league?
Oh, 100%. I mean, the fact that Jamal Rowell is on the bench and he leads their team in interceptions, and to me, I think we've kind of let go under the radar throughout this entire, you know, end of the season, especially into the playoffs, to me is the new Calvin Tiggle for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Jesse Tuggle, from Tiggle to Tuggle, baby. I mean, this guy has been on fire. And last week, he helped cause two turnovers along with Dylan Wynn on that forced fumble by CJ Gable early on. But then he got the tipped interception in the second half, which kind of helped start to put ice on this game as far as for Hamilton against Edmonton that was. But to me, he's been like the unsung hero of this defense with the way he's been playing. Of course, Jagarrett Davis, Dylan Wynn, Simone Lawrence, they're getting all the accolades and all the press and media focus. But to me, he's going to be the big key as far as going into this game. And it just shows you the type of depth that they have, because there's guys that are making plays that we don't even talk about. You got Julian Hauser, who made a lot of key plays, getting pressure into the backfield on Trevor Harris and CJ Gable, and he backed up Adrian Tracy. So it goes to show you how deep this team is, and they continue to pull guys off the sideline that are making plays. I mean, Lorenzo, I call him Candy Maldonado, but Lorenzo Malden, I mean, he had a sack last week as well coming off the bench. So these guys have so much depth on this team, and you look at the receiving core, Jalen Marshall to Marcus Tucker. We didn't even know who Braylon Addison was for really this year. Right. I mean, he was still a guy trying to prove himself, and now with some of the injuries that have occurred, he stepped up and became one of the biggest playmakers in this league. I mean, you've got to tip your hat off to that scouting department, to Orlando Steinauer, to all that coaching staff, and the coordinators for getting this team ready to play, but also for the leaders on that team, making sure these young guys who are now stars and becoming even more, like having more of a star status in this league, making sure that they stay on those young guys, that they prepare the right way and mentally go out and play the game the way they're expected to.
Candy Maldonado is a great baseball reference. Thank you.
Oh, there we go.
You went deep in the archives.
They still know who Candy Maldonado was.
Come on, buddy.
There's a bunch of our listeners who are so young they don't know. But that was great.
That was legit.
I tipped you. Yeah.
We're recording this on Tuesday. Now it's Grey Cup week. I could already on Tuesday hear a little bit of scratching your voice, Hank. So I'm sure you're with the crew and with your folks in Calgary enjoying the festivities already in Grey Cup week. Is there, you know, the balance, we know the balance when you're a player and of getting your rest but still enjoying your friends and family and the celebration. How about as a panel member? How about as a member of the media? How are you going to try to juggle enjoying yourself in the party that Canada's best party of the Grey Cup, but still being ready to go? What are you thinking? Have you got a plan for this?
Well, you know, Davis, you know, we got to be ready to go. You know, when it comes game time, and the cameras come on, and the lights are on, and the crowd is in the stands, and everybody's at home with their Tex-Mex, their whatever, you know, football food that they're going to have, tailgating food. We got to be ready to go. Your eyes got to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and so on and so forth. So early in the week, yeah, I'm going to enjoy myself, spend time with all the guys on the panel and all of our technical staff behind the scenes, buy those guys a cold one, like Canadians should, you know, and enjoy the time because this is what we work hard for to get to this point in the season, and this is our last hurrah. But as we get closer to game time, it's time to focus in and get ready to go get your sleep because Sunday is a long day. Regardless of, you know, all the excitement going on, it's a long day because we're there on site about 10 a.m. and we go till about just after midnight Eastern time. So it's going to be a long day. But, you know, to kind of add to this grogginess in my throat, yesterday it was +7, almost +10 here. It's snowing outside right now, and it's cold. So, you know, whoever's heading west, make sure you bring your parka, bring your toques, bring your gloves, your scarves, and, you know, get ready to enjoy yourself. But, you know, for the rest of the week, it's going to be great weather, though. I mean, they're saying it's going to be 5 centimeters today. But, yeah, for the rest of the week, it's going to be outstanding. A beautiful time in the prairies on the foothills of the Rockies.
I made sure I lightened my load this year in regards to work because last year I overworked myself. I didn't get a chance to fully enjoy everything. And like you said, this is it's all about Sunday, but it is a celebration of the season and for everyone to enjoy it. So I'm with you. I'm going to go out there and have some fun this year, enjoy myself a little more than I did the last couple of years. But I think 48 hours before kickoff, we'll start to lemon and hot water and get some rest. DJ, you got a game plan for all this?
I am looking forward to getting some sleep because I will be away from my young child.
Yes.
So I will not be at Cowboys late at night with Davis. But Hank, you talked about the weather, and I want to get your opinion on what has been, I think, a building conversation over the last couple Grey Cups, and it's whether or not the actual date of the game should move up, that maybe you have a bit better weather in most parts of Canada than you have some attendance, or do some people feel like the end of November is when the Grey Cup is? It's just the rhythm of the Canadian sports calendar. I mean, you've played in it, you've been to it. Where's your stance?
I always believe in the fact that when you have something that's been cemented for so long, you stand strong. And to me, with the Canadian Football League, it's the oldest football league in North America. It's been around forever. And just as I've always said on the stance of when these other little cookie-cutter leagues come about, CFL, stand strong. You've been here for over 100 years for a reason. And the reason why the Grey Cup is the second most viewed sporting event on a yearly basis in North America, and even in some cases across the world, stand firm. I mean, this Grey Cup has been outstanding for 107 years, what we're going to witness on Sunday. And it's always been that way. It's always been one of the more spectacular events to ever experience and also to witness when the ball's kicked off. I mean, to me, stand firm. This is Canada. Whether it's snow, whether it's a Chinook here in Calgary come Sunday, stand firm. I mean, this game is going to be exciting, and each and every year it is, and people plan around coming to the festival and enjoy it because every end of November, you always know that you get a chance to enjoy one of the more spectacular events and parties and extravaganzas that take place, and these are memories that we'll keep forever. So the fact that it's at the end of November, I would never change it because to me, perfection, let it stay perfection, and let's continue to enjoy it.
Preach! Talk to him, Hank!
Church!
I love it. I love it. And lastly, before we let you go, and everyone is so, so happy for Zach, and I don't know, maybe I'm just a sensitive person, but as happy I am for Zach, I also look at Jeremiah Masoli, and I feel like, oh, I just want to give my guy a hug. Talk to me about where his mentals would be this week as a competitor wanting to obviously be the guy that ends the drought for Hamilton and lead them to a Grey Cup, but at the same time, happy for your guys that you've lifted weights with and run stairs with, but also personally, you know that you're going into a situation where you're going to be a free agent. What is that conflict like for an athlete?
It's a bittersweet feeling, because it's bitter because, like you mentioned, you want to be the guy, and you want it to be that guy who's helped lead this team to the promised land, and they knew they had the ingredients and the recipe to make that happen this season. And it's unfortunate that he couldn't be that guy who's leading this team here in Calgary this Sunday. But it's something where he's been able to sit back and deal with it week to week, day after day, play after play. And he's pretty much just accepted that reality at this point. And you have to, because you have to enjoy this journey, because the fact is he's here with this team. His family's going to be here and enjoying the moment, being at the award show, being at the game, being at practice. You know, this is something that you have to enjoy, because he's never guaranteed that he'll get back, regardless of where he is next year. If it's with Hamilton, if it's not, he's not guaranteed to get back to this Grey Cup. So for him, it's all about him using that leadership that he's accepted, that role. He's still that figure in that locker room where when he says something, people listen. And the thing is, he doesn't say it as quickly now because he knows there's an extra voice that's leading in the locker room now with Dane Evans. But yeah, it's bittersweet because he's still happy the fact that his team gets a chance to compete for a Grey Cup championship and to be in this game. And they knew and they expected to be in this game. And just as every guy has a role to play, now he must step back and play his role, because at the end of the day, it's all about winning that cup, winning that championship, and getting that big check, baby. And so, you know, he's going to be excited about that. You know, he still got some mouths to feed. And to me, I'm looking forward to seeing. And I know there's, you know, these two guys have talked, prior to this game. But the first glimpse when Hamilton sees Zach Kolaris, and especially Simone Lawrence, will they see an actual guy or will they see a ghost? To me, that's going to be something I'm interested to see how that first encounter is going to be and how things are going to go during that game. Because if I'm the Winnipeg offense, and especially the offensive line, I got 21 in my sights, and I'm making sure he doesn't get close to our quarterback. And so I'm interested to see how that's going to go. But, yeah, we love the feel-good story. And as much as Zach was ruled out and a lot of us said that Winnipeg would never make it, you know, it's something to see these guys here in it. And they seem like they're a team of destiny. And right now they got to climb Mount Everest, and let's see if they can do it.
Are they both captains? Like, will they see each other for the coin toss?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing that during the coin toss. Let's see. And does he go out or does another quarterback go out? So will it be Chris Trevler or will it be Zach Kolaris? So I'm interested to see
one of those two guys doesn't want that smoke. I'll let you figure out who it is.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the guys was congratulating the other on Twitter, and the other was silent in the response. So
yeah.
I don't know. Remember when we used to scrutinize Kobe and Shaq when they would get back together, what they were going to do in the middle of the game?
I don't want to be your friend. I don't care what happened before. I don't need you to accept my apology at this point in time. Let's just go. We could talk about it in January or February right now. I don't care.
It's going to be a juicy one for sure. It's going to be a fun one. Thank you so much, Hank, for breaking down with us. And make sure you have some fun back in Calgary for the big game.
Hey, well, tell Davis I have a bottle of Pinot Noir with his name on it, since you can get everything out here, and it's all controlled in Ontario. And Alberta, it's wide open, Davis. Let's have some fun.
Let's get it.
Davis, it's Tums time. Time to give our Waggle sponsors at Tums a shout-out.
Let's do it.
Guess what food gets the biggest reaction from our American players when they come up here?
Poutine or beaver tails?
I love beaver tails, but it's the first one, poutine. For some reason, our American players can get their head around chili fries, but you toss cheese and gravy on there, it's just too crazy for them. You know where they have good stadium poutine?
Yep, the place I like to refer to as the house that Sanchez built, Percival Molson Stadium in Montreal.
That's right. They've upped their game. They've leveled up. Brody Lawson let me know that they have a Creole poutine. Whatever you throw back on game day, if you go a little too hard, try Tums, because when heartburn hits, hit back fast and hard with Tums. Get relief, Tums fast. So So that is the Waggle, the Grey Cup edition. Myself and Davis, we're going to be live at a Sport Clips recording a Waggle. So be sure to stay tuned to the social media channels of the CFL to see some of that content. And we're going to have content throughout the week on CFL.ca, breaking down everything you need to know about the big game, Media Day, the Player Awards, and obviously the big game on Sunday. It is the 107th Grey Cup presented by Shaw. Can't wait.